This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson.
And joining me are Darius Thomas.
I'm reluctantly wearing college gear.
And Brock Rom.
We have to see whose hometown was smaller.
From former college athlete to leading the creative department at BYU, today's guest, Tyson Hutchins, has a strong voice in the digital space in college athletics. His job now is focused on strategy, so we talk about the why. Why is content being created? Why do we need to change something? Why are we creating the team's social content in a certain voice? Creating with intention all comes back to the strategy.
Let's see. 05. Best one yet.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today, we're joined by Tyson Hutchins, who is the Associate Athletic Director for Creative Strategy at BYU. Spent some time at Clemson as well, building the program there. So excited to have you on and talk a little strategy, Tyson. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. I've been a big fan of the show, so I'm excited to be here.
Appreciate it. Can you just start by giving us a little background on how you got into doing content?
Yeah, absolutely. I consider myself an extremely late bloomer when it comes to creative content. I grew up in a really small town, Grantsville, Utah. Grew up playing sports, and there just wasn't many creative opportunities. To be honest, it never crossed my mind. In hindsight, I recognize that I was creative and kind of had that spark in my brain, but wasn't something that was part of my life growing up in any way. All the way until college. I played baseball in college and then stopped playing. And when I was a junior in college, my plan was to go to law school. I had taken the LSAT, I was applying to law schools. And then I saw an internship in the athletic department in social media. I was going to BYU at the time, which is where I work now. And I was like, oh, I like social, I think, and I like sports, and applied and got it. And very quickly I was like, this is way better than law school and things like that. And so kind of in the matter of like 6 months, I hard pivoted my career and just tried to soak in as much as I could. And that's kind of where my creative journey started, kind of in the last 18 months of my college career and time. So that's kind of how it all started. I think it's rather unconventional. Sometimes I'm jealous of these kids that I get emails from that are like, I'm a junior in college and I love doing this and their work is better than a lot of full-time people I see. And so I'm grateful to be where I am, but I was certainly a late bloomer for sure.
Yeah, you talk about just the difference in when you were in college and the interns now. Just talk about that growth of the industry from when you were a student to now, how many more resources they have and how many more opportunities there are now as opposed to when you were coming up in the industry.
Boy, that's a great question. It feels like a world of difference. To put it in perspective, when I was coming up, Vine was still alive and thriving. Instagram had just added video, 15-second video. And there were really like a few schools and groups across the country doing it really, really well. Clemson for me was always the gold standard. And then like it may have been like Ohio State and Texas and maybe a little bit of South Carolina. That was it at the time. And I think about that, which really isn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things. We're talking maybe 10 years. But boy, has it flourished to the point where no matter where you go to school, no matter what the opportunities are, there's usually an opportunity as a young person to get great experience in some way. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't jealous of young people and the opportunities that they have now because they're plentiful. It's awesome to see. I know we've got a lot of a lot of things that we can work on in the industry, but opportunities and the way people are able to share their work and grow is plentiful, and it's one of my favorite things about it, to be honest.
So let's talk about Clemson. Talk about how that came about. You graduate, you pass on BYU. Talk about the journey to get to Clemson and how that started out for you.
You bet. I'll be honest. It's very surreal even now thinking about it. This is a story I always tell. So I graduated from BYU and immediately started working full time at BYU in the athletic department. Was fortunate enough to be able to have that opportunity. And at the time, we felt like we wanted to model our department after someone. And so, as I mentioned, I thought Clemson was a gold standard. I reached out to Nick Conklin at the time, who's with the Tennessee Titans now. And he was awesome. He was great. I was able to pick his brain, and we really modeled what we did here at BYU after Clemson. And I always tell this story. If you guys are familiar with the NCAA marketplace, it's like the job board for college athletics. I signed up for 3 job notifications: creative jobs, social media jobs, and jobs at Clemson. Those were the 3 notifications that I signed up for in the marketplace. And I was very fortunate to one day work for Clemson. So I worked at BYU for a few years, and we really modeled our department after what they were doing. And then one day I got a call from Jonathan Gant and Nick Conklin about an opportunity at Clemson, and I felt like it was earlier than I'd ever expected, but something that I couldn't pass up on. And so went to Clemson, was there for 3 years, served in a number of capacities, but the final one being the Associate Athletic Director of Creative Solutions at Clemson, and was able to continue building on the great things that Jonathan Gant and Jeff Callen and Nick Conklin were doing there, and just really, really grateful for the time. I feel like I got a master's degree in creative, if there is such a thing. And so a fantastic experience and one I'm super, super grateful for.
Talk about that transition. You say you model BYU's department off of Clemson and what you learned there. But can you talk about what the similarities are and what you took from there, and then what the differences are maybe in voice between the different fan bases, you know, and what the differences are there between the two programs and how you modeled it?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think the core element that we modeled it after was how we utilize students. Obviously, we're at a education of higher learning. Students are the backbone of college, universities, and athletic departments even. And that was really the core thing that we took, was I was seeing these fantastic students at Clemson, Max Huggins, Andy Turner, Maddie Williams, some of these people who have gone on to be huge names in the business. And I felt like we had those types of talented students here at BYU. And so that was a real core function of what we took from them at the time, was the ability to build creative departments with student interns. And obviously the athletic department would benefit from that, but also the students, and give them phenomenal opportunities. And one of my favorite things in the entire world is to see a student grow and flourish and get opportunities and be able to move on to different things. And I've been able to see that both here at BYU and at Clemson. And it's one of my favorite things to this day. I think from a voice perspective, at Clemson, it's all about recruiting. Everything we do is about telling the story of what it's like to be a Clemson Tiger. I think here at BYU, it's a little more holistic, fan-focused, as well as recruit-focused. And so I think as far as voice and tone and even types of content, that's a difference that I'm very aware of, and something that I've focused on at both places. And both things are important. I don't think there's one good way or one right way. It's just different based on the place and the audience and what the goals of the institution are.
Starting as an athlete, how do you think that's helped you along your journey in understanding what types of content would resonate, especially when you're in that recruiting heavy atmosphere at Clemson?
100%. I feel very fortunate to have grown up in that way. I don't think it's a requirement by any means. I'll say that as well. But just to be in locker rooms and to have an understanding of like the team and some of the dynamics of those things. Like, for example, I have a really good understanding of like if a highlight tape gets made for one person in the running back room, and like not for another one. And maybe they're splitting reps and like what that dynamic might create. I have a really good awareness for that, and I'm grateful for that understanding. It can be learned, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't think it was advantageous that I have some of that like firsthand experience of what it's like to be a student athlete.
And you, to kind of piggyback off of that, now that social media has expanded as much as it has, the more opportunities that there are for former student athletes who the goal used to be, you know, pro sports and then kind of downhill from there, but actually still getting a chance to talk about the importance of the opportunities now being there for former athletes to still be around sports and further careers.
Yeah, no question. I actually think NIL has probably accelerated that as well, especially in the college ranks of like, there's this value proposition that they see in social media and content. And while they're a student athlete, they're able to kind of experience what that might be. We had a student athlete at Clemson, Darian Rencher, who was a backup running back, but was able to create a real social presence. And now like his primary job is content, right? As he's graduated, both working with others, but building it for himself. And it's just as these platforms grow and these student athletes have the opportunity to see the value that they can provide in storytelling, and showing their experience, I think it will only benefit them. There's a very, I'm such a fan of name, image, and likeness and those things because there's such a finite time that they're here or somewhere else or have the opportunity to experience those things. And both the skills that they can learn through that time with some of the opportunities they have now, as well as the experience, will set them up to be extremely successful throughout the rest of their life.
How important is it for you to have a strategy? I mean, social media, when it first started out, it was just, let's just put stuff out there. Did you learn that at Clemson? And how much do you take that into your day-to-day now as a director?
It's a great question. Strategy is everything, I feel like, especially in my role now, as I can see it and have kind of been through some things. I'll never forget, I was interviewing someone, a really talented creator, and I just asked him, like, what do you want to do? Like what do you want to do? And their response was, like, I just want to make cool stuff. And I was like, cool, like, same. But, like, if you're making cool stuff with no direction, like, it's not a value. Like we have a direction and an audience and things like that. And boy, the strategy behind it is everything, right? And I actually think that's what a lot of groups lack, is like they'll have really talented creators, but they're just like spraying and praying for content or opportunities. Like, you got to have the audience in mind, you got to have the circumstances in mind, you got to have the platform in mind. And to be honest, that's a primary part of my job now, and that was a primary part of my job at Clemson was. We had very, very specific audience, very specific purpose with the type of content we create, with the type of platforms we focus on. That is critical. I think that is a differentiator between groups who do things really, really well and groups who just make cool stuff, is the strategy behind the content and how they utilize these platforms and things that we all work in.
You're preaching to the choir on that. We've talked about it on this podcast before. I used to have editors who worked under me and came up to me and I'd ask them why they made a specific cut or why they did this or that. And it would always be, well, because it looks cool. It's like, well, okay, but that's not, you know, what's the direction behind it? And, you know, you can tell me anything, but as long as you have an intent behind it, right? That's better than not having an intent and a strategy. How does that strategy evolve, maybe not just year to year, but season to season for you as you go from sport to sport? Do you look at different sports through a different strategic lens with an overarching voice and plan and then modify from there? How does that work for you?
That's a good question. Real quick, I'll comment on the why'd you make this cut. I have a rule in our department. You can use the excuse, it's cool, 20% of the time. 20% of the time you can be like that. Nah, it's cool. Like, that's why I did it. It's cool. Like, sometimes that's sufficient. But most of the time, it should not be. It should be very intentional with why we created this thing or why we did this. Like we're trying to be very intentional. We're not artists. We're content creators. And like the work we do is inherently artistic, but it's not art just for the sake of art. It's very different. And so I'm very bullish on that and like being strategic with what we do. As far as voice and strategy and how we go about things, obviously football steers the ship in college athletics. That is what it is. And so one of the things that I focus on, and to be honest, this is largely due to just like resources and being able to do it, is to me, and this was the way at Clemson, this is how we function here, is like football is the example. Like I'm trying to drive what we do with football and then trickle everything down from there. With the exception of a couple things, one is voice. We want the voice of our accounts to be an extension of the team's group chat. That's what I always say, is like, imagine the account is a member of the team's group chat. What does that sound like? What does that look like? How is the speaking happening? And that varies largely from team to team. We have teams who are very serious, very gritty. They don't have a good time. Like they are very focused on the task at hand. And then we have other teams who are loose. We also manage the account for what I think is the best mascot in the country, in Cosmo the Cougar. And his account is like loose. Like he's a mascot. He should have like a tone and a voice that's very different. And so as far as voice and tone goes, that varies widely. And it should, in my opinion, based on the team. But as far as like the type of content, what we create, the quality, kind of the vision, I really think the best way to go about it, just from a resources perspective, is football drives that. And then there's a trickle down from that, that hey, we did this here. It worked really well, or it didn't work really well. And how can the rest of our sports learn from those things?
When you're talking about digital, that's kind of been your focus, it seems like, since you got into this, especially at Clemson and now where you are at BYU. How much have you seen digital change and evolve as far as the platforms that you are working with and how you're able to have the resources to be able to provide for the different teams?
Yeah, great question. It's evolved a lot. You know, I think there was a time where, and I kind of think we've come full circle a little bit, to be honest. When I first started, websites and email, like that was what we owned. We owned that. And a lot of our focus went there. And then social kind of came along and stole the show for a really long time. And now I think we've all kind of realized that like social is important, but it's the top of the funnel as far as what we're doing. And like, how can we drive people to land that we own? Like Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, all these, Twitter, all these platforms are rented land. Like there's nothing I can do when the TikTok algorithm doesn't like what we do. There's nothing I can do when Facebook decides to push static images rather than video images or video content. And so now I really believe in a holistic digital ecosystem, atmosphere, storytelling mechanism, where we think about, yeah, social is important. Like I love social. I love the memery of it and Twitter and TikTok and all these things. But how can we then drive those people to our owned and operated platforms? How can we drive them to the website? At Clemson, how can we drive them to Clemson Plus? How can our most valuable customers, how can we get them to a place? Or how can we push recruits to go from, hey, I like their content, to like connecting with a coach? And so I really believe in like a holistic atmosphere of like, I'm passionate about social. It's what I love most, but also recognizing the limitations of it and how we can drive people to places where we can really be impactful, whether that's storytelling, whether that's transacting, whether that's selling tickets, whatever that might be.
You mentioned the funnel, and a lot of people, that's a new term to them, or maybe it was agency speak at some point. But kind of talk about the importance of the funnel, how you decide what's at the top and how it trickles down, and the strategy behind organizing everything to flow through a funnel and not just sit in a funnel.
That's a good question. And I'm still trying to figure it out. I by no means have it figured out. I think to your point, one of the big things is like, especially in college athletics, just making people aware that like there is a funnel. Like there is a funnel, right? We're not just creating for the sake of creating or for just retweets or just shares or likes or comments. Like we're creating with a purpose. And a lot of times the purpose is at the top of the funnel and how we can drive them through the process, right? Whether that's affinity for the brand. I think that's a big one. It's like a lot of what we do is just to build affinity for the brand. And like that's part of the funnel as well. To start affinity for the brand, that might mean someone sees something on the For You page, right? On TikTok. And then how can we get them to like go through that funnel enough that they then follow the account? Right. And that kind of takes them through the next step of the funnel. And then maybe that drives them to eventually like buy tickets or buy apparel. Right. But I think the biggest thing is people I talk to, they don't even know about like they're just creating for the sake of creating. And like that, I think, is maturity in like understanding what our purpose is whether it's a recruit, whether it's a customer, like we are taking them through the journey of fandom, affinity for the brand, transacting, whatever that might be, and just having an awareness of that process that we're trying to take them through is like the first step. And I, to be honest, I don't think a lot of places have that awareness, or at least at the creator level. At the creator level, they're not thinking about it. And in my opinion, they should. They should be thinking about like, what's the purpose of this? Why are we doing this? What are we creating this for? And that's something I've really tried to instill in my staff here and my staff at Clemson as well. And I hope we do a really good job of it.
Yeah. I like to stay there for a second, cause I think this is really important. What you just said, the importance of the creator knowing the reason behind it, not just, oh, that's what we always do, or that's what we're supposed to do. And explaining the funnel, I spent 12 to 14 years in college athletics, and not once had I ever been in a meeting where they talked about a funnel. And this is what it was always. We want to sell tickets. We want to sell tickets. We want to sell tickets. But not realizing that there's a strategy. Everyone who sees the greatest of videos isn't going to end up in a transaction. Right. So just talk about that importance from like you say, affinity for the brand and whatever we're trying to accomplish, you know, make cool stuff. But at the end of the day, we want it to flow to, you know, prime example, no pun intended, University of Colorado just hired Coach Sanders. And yesterday they put out a graphic that basically showed the funnel. They had this many impressions on it that led to the highest day of merchandise. That's the complete funnel. Some people are going to go straight there and transact, but you'll have new people buying that never bought before because of the product. So kind of talk through that.
Yeah, this is a great question. First and foremost, I got to tip my cap to the folks at Colorado. Like, there's a saying that I love. We stole it from Nike. It's certainly not original. It's like, I love to say when the world's watching. And boy, has Colorado done that. Like they have done a fantastic job with Coach Sanders, Dion, like in the opportunity and recognizing that and being prepared for that. And kind of to your point about the understanding of the funnel or the goals or what we're doing. Like, I think that's why creative leadership is so important. Like, people who understand creative and understand strategy and having those types of leaders. I cringe a little bit every time I see a job listed and it's like a creative on an island. Like, boy, that's going to be rough. Like, that's going to be so hard to be successful. Like, that's going to be a 12 to 18 month job. And I think about that a lot just because of the creative. To do it really well, you got to have so much direction and understanding and like holistic understanding. And I just think we lack that a lot. And that really helps. That helps. If I can understand the context of why I'm asking for something, why I'm asking a creative to do something and why it matches the needs. I'll give you an example. We have paid social right now encouraging folks to transfer their tickets if they can't make it to the game. Hey, give someone the experience of BYU basketball. Give someone the experience by transferring your tickets, because we want to increase the fan experience. And so I just have a quick conversation with our creative who's working on that asset and say, hey, we need to work on this. And I try and really give them an understanding of why. Like, here's why we're doing this. I know it's not the sexiest thing, but it's important because we're trying to build fan experiences, garner new fans as we enter the Big 12. We want them to have that experience before, and so that we can hopefully then drive ticket sales and do these things. And so I think that that's a big aspect of creative leadership. Like, it's not just like, hey, make a cut here, or like, this color grade's off. Like, it's like, how can I help these creatives, some young, some old, to have an understanding of why we do things? Like, what's the purpose behind it? And I think that is an area that the creative industry as a whole has a lot of room to grow. We hear this term creative strategy, right? But like, what is the strategy? How can we communicate it? Do we communicate it? Like, that is something that I'm like super bullish about, is like helping people understand why, like why we do things. So I don't know if that answered your question directly, but it's allow me to get on my soapbox a little bit about how we go about things in this business.
No, that was a great response.
I actually wonder, do you think the fact that so many jobs open so quickly and so many teams tried to take on creative, that there was too many job openings and people filled those that were content creators initially that didn't really have that background of understanding or leadership to begin with?
I actually think it has more to do with like the needs of creatives across the board, like inside of sports, outside of sport. Like, sports aren't the only folks who need creatives. Like, X coach from X team, they're not the only ones who need creative resources. Like, other places do as well, tech companies and agencies and all these things. And I actually think that has more to do with like the state of the job market in creative than anything. Is like, creatives have more options than ever right now, which is awesome for creators. Difficult for universities or small schools or small sports or things like that. But I think that is what happened, is we've seen just a flood of people recognizing the value of creatives. And we talk about salaries or whatever, like value, but there's no question that people value creative work. And I think that it has a lot to do with like what we've seen with both job openings, the market, how it's changed, all things like that.
You talked a little bit earlier about where you started in the industry, what the trends were, what the norms were. Vine was still around, like you said. What do you see developing on the horizon? What do you think the future of the industry, you know, not social and digital altogether, but, you know, as it relates to the creative scope of work and creative social and digital, what do you see that's on the horizon that you think is changing?
Short form vertical video is not going anywhere. Like that is going to be a significant aspect of all of our lives for a long time to come. But, and so that is what is now. What I think is on the horizon is how can we take that short form video and hook people into larger things, right? And so how can we take that short form video and hook people into a longer form piece? Or how can we utilize it to drive ticket sales or things like that? And I think that we're trying to figure that out. I think everyone is, like, even YouTubers, like Mr. Beast doesn't want to make 40-second TikToks, but like he will, because he hopes that 40-second TikTok will lead to someone watching his Charlie and the Chocolate Factory 12-minute YouTube video, right? And so I think how content works together is like the next phase of where we're going as far as like strategy. I think creative wise, it'll be very interesting to see how AI continues to be part of what we do. ChatGPT has taken over like Twitter and things the last few days. I'm very curious to see how that'll impact as it progresses creative work, right? I hope it can eliminate the minutia of it. I hate picking selects, like as a video editor. Like I hate doing that. Like I want the selects and so that I can do the creative work. And I'm really excited about how technology will help us with that. And so I think as technology advances, that'll be a big aspect of like creatives. Like how can we utilize these tools to allow us to be more creative or focus on the story more or things like that.
Switching gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about as you progress in your career, become the associate AD or the senior associate AD of creative strategy and all that. Talk about the distance between that position and the actual day-to-day creative, because that's something that, I hear people all the time. You probably heard it during some of the other episodes. It's like, oh yeah, I don't get a chance to do this anymore, or I want to do this. Talk about that distance between the work and when you become a chief strategist or creative director and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. The never-ending battle of being the creative or being the manager of creatives. First and foremost, I feel very fortunate that like there was a time where I sat in the dark rooms. Like I sat in the dark rooms. I was in a timeline for 10 hours a day. Like and so I feel very fortunate to have that experience now as like a leader, because I understand what I'm asking when we need something changed and it's 4 p.m. Like I understand what I'm asking when we are trying to turn something around because we've won a big game. Like I understand what I'm asking, and that's super valuable for me. I believe as a creative leader, I feel fortunate to be in that sense. But for me, I'd be lying. And I credit, Jonathan Gant. He's one of my biggest mentors, had kind of built everything at Clemson. And I really credit him with this. One day we were talking as like some things were progressing at Clemson. And he said, you have the opportunity to affect multiple timelines, or you can continue to build your own. Like you can either be the one creating a single timeline, or you can affect multiple. And he was using like video editing as like a reference, right? And that's something that I really took to heart was, as a creative leader, like how can I shift from like having this one thing that I'm so proud of and like that I love to shifting into being so proud of people, being so proud of creatives, being so proud of like the brand as a whole. And I think everyone, as they progress, they have to make that decision. And it's not right or wrong, but like you have to decide, like, am I going to be the one who's like in the dark room? And like, I am going to be in the timeline and I'm going to create this thing, or am I going to try and affect multiple timelines and multiple creatives and multiple assets and different things? And I was fortunate, I think, for me, like to make that transition, and it's a difficult one, but one that I'm thankful for. And like, do I still love to like jump in and like cut a little thing together? Yeah. Do I love to take a photo or to get the shot? I think about that all the time. Is like, boy, I love to get a shot still, but I sure love to see like a young creative get the shot. Like, boy, that's one of my favorite things. I love to see that. And that like fires me up in a major way. I love to see a young creative like grow and progress and like get a job. I'm like, man, like that's awesome. And so, for me, I've been fortunate to be able to make that transition. It works really well for me and my personality, but it's a difficult one. I'm not going to lie. There are times where I wish I could just edit instead of like being in meetings, but it works for me and I'm grateful for it. And so I don't know, hopefully that gives a little bit of insight to like how I made the transition and like what I think is valuable with it.
Yeah. And let's stay there for a second. As a leader who's responsible for, editors and probably producers and photographers, all creatives, how does a leader, then kind of grow the next wave of leaders. And we talked to someone a couple of episodes ago, and they were talking about that not being their end place. That's what she likes to tell the people. How are you taking that opportunity as a leader to grow those who you're responsible for into the next wave of leaders?
That's a great question. One is, I always give the why. Like that, I want them to have an understanding of why we're doing what we're doing. Why have we changed the tone on Twitter versus on Facebook? Why are we doing that? And I hope through a lot of why conversations, they're able to grow and progress. That is first and foremost. And then the other thing is I love to utilize the connections I've been able to build and to put young creatives in rooms, on Zoom calls with people who can help them progress, receive internship opportunities and understand like what's out there. I've had creatives who I've had conversations with that I'm like, look, sports isn't for you. Like agency work is for you. Like you want to work on a project and see it through, and it might take 3, 6, 12 months. And then I've had other creatives who want to turn things as fast as possible. And so those two things are what I view as like really helping creatives grow is one, helping them understand the why. Like I'm not going to talk about anything they can learn on YouTube. Like if you want to learn how to make J cuts and L cuts and like transition, like there's plenty of YouTube videos about that. For us, I want to talk about the why of what we do, because I think it's the most valuable. And then just trying to do everything I can to put those people in the appropriate rooms, connected with the appropriate people to make sure that they have the opportunities that they should receive.
You touched on a little bit there with students. How do you approach, obviously there's turnover every couple years and you haven't been at BYU long enough to see that, but from your time at Clemson as well, what do you focus on with the students and where do you see the biggest areas of opportunity for them?
It's hard. I'd be lying if I said like the turnover wasn't one of the hardest things about utilizing students. So much turnover, so much growth, like coming in and out. And so for me, one of the things that I think is important for anyone who wants to utilize students as creatives or give them experiences, like you have to establish a baseline. Like, and so that's one thing I really try and focus on is like, hey, here's the minimum we require. And those are things that we can teach quickly. Basics of photo editing, basics of video editing, Premiere. Hey, watch these 5 tutorials and I think you'll be sufficient in like how to understand frame rate and shutter and these different things. And so I think too many places don't set a baseline for like what they expect from a young creative. And so we really try and set that baseline that we believe everyone can reach. And then if they want to go above and beyond that, awesome. Like, I think that's great. But we really try and establish a baseline. Hey, here's what we need from you. If you want to go above and beyond that, awesome. But like, we can teach this. We can teach this quickly, maybe in the span of 2 weeks or one game or something like that. And then we try and build from there. So it's by no means perfect science, but I think that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, I guess we can jump into the goals. You know, you had mentioned you were an athlete, you went to school at BYU, you had the dream opportunity to get out to Clemson and work with that crew, and now coming back with BYU heading to the Big 12 next year, what is your outlook? And it sounds like one of the big reasons they brought you back is you know the school well, you know who they are, you know who they want to be, and you have this experience now with a school like Clemson to be able to deliver in the Big 12. So what does your next year look like as BYU is looking to head to the Big 12?
Yeah, it's a great question. I hope that's a big part of why I'm here. I gotta just give kudos to the folks at Clemson, Graham Neff, Jonathan Gett, those Tim Match, those people. Like I feel like I received an MBA in like college athletics and creative and all those things. And I'm so grateful for it and for what I was able to learn there in a place like that, at that level and with that type of success. And in coming back, like I'm really trying to take a lot of those things and implement them here. We have so many resources here, which is awesome. There's been a real buy-in into creative, marketing, promotion, a lot of what we do, recruiting. And what I'm really trying to do is make sure that we're taking all those resources and headed in the same direction and headed in the right direction of what we need to do to grow the brand and to make it a power. I'll be honest. I think we have as many and as bought in of resources here as anyone in the country. And I'm really trying to make sure that we're pointing all those in the right direction of like, how are we building the brand as we open up into new markets? Like how are we exposing the BYU brand to those communities that may not be familiar? And then how are we recruiting as well? How are we targeting student athletes who we may not have been in the ballpark with before, but now going into the Big 12 we are. And so those are just a few ways. And then I'd be lying if I said I wasn't here just because of the love of the brand. I grew up a BYU fan. I sat in the bleachers and I'm grateful for that. And to be able to do what I do now and to be able to affect a brand I care deeply about now in this way. And so a lot there, but surely excited about the path ahead and what we're trying to do.
Talk about the challenge of working at a school that you went to. You talked about the advantages of knowing the brand, but how challenging is it to work at a school that you spent time as a student and as an athlete?
Yeah, that's something we don't talk about very often, is like fandom as a negative. It surely is at times. I care deeply about the brand at Clemson, but like it didn't hit quite the same way when we would lose there as it does at a place that you went and the place that you grew up going to. Like there's certainly an emotional connection in that way. And I have to manage it. Like there are certainly times where I have to recognize like there's a photographer who's worked here for a really long time and we joke around a lot. And one of the things that he said to me, like I was real upset after a game, just like, you know, the typical like, I can't believe we this and that. And he said, hey, did you miss any shots? And I was like, no. And he was like, well, it looks like you and I did our job. Like we got focus on that. And so that's one thing I think about a lot, is like controlling what we can control. And I don't know how else to go about it at a place that you care deeply about. Part of the emotion and the affinity for it is what makes it so great to work there. But also to manage it is something that I do have to focus on. I'd be lying if I said I didn't.
What would be your advice to your younger self as well as students?
I'll say this. I was fortunate to have this, but I stumbled into it. Like I'll be the first to admit that I stumbled into it, but I was fortunate to have it. Is to seek creative mentorship rather than a brand or a logo or something like that. Like I originally sought to work at a place like Clemson because it was Clemson, because of the success on the field and things like that. And luckily, I stumbled into some unbelievable creative and professional mentorship by being there. And there were times where I had the opportunity to potentially work at other places. And like, I quickly recognized the creative and professional mentorship wasn't there. And so I'm not gonna work at a place like that, no matter how prominent the brand is, no matter how big the logo is. And that's one thing I regularly tell students, young people, is like seek creative mentorship or professional mentorship over a brand or a logo. Did I benefit from working at a place as prominent and well-known and as with as many followers as Clemson football does? Absolutely. But the real value of being there was the mentorship, the creative mentorship and professional mentorship that I had, of understanding the business of college athletics, of understanding creative and some of the grander marketing things that we've talked about here in this podcast. And so that's one thing I would tell them. Hey, like logos are great, but you're fortunate if you can get both. I was fortunate to get both. Like I got a big brand and I got great creative mentorship, but like seek the mentorship. Like there's so much value in seeking that and making sure that wherever you go, you're going to get that. I think that's super valuable. And if you can't get it where you work, seek it other places. Hit the DMs, reach out to people, pay attention to what other people do. But seek that creative mentorship for sure.
Hit the transfer portal.
That's right. You know where to find me.
You know, when I talk to some people in college, there's concern for fractured creatives, whether that means like some creatives report up to football or report up to basketball or different sports. How are you set up, and how are you hoping to be set up going forward if it's not your ideal right now?
Yeah. This actually piggybacks right off what I said, or just barely, about creative mentorship. We have a strength and conditioning department. We have a training department. We have a nutrition department. We have a compliance department. Why do we then just plop creatives in sports? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And so I'm a big believer in building departments, like building units of creatives. And I think that's so valuable from a creative mentorship standpoint. I talked earlier about how we can do something in football and that has trickle down effects into our other sports and how they can benefit from those things. And so I'm bullish on that. Anyone who will listen, like, that's what I try and tell them is, hey, you benefit from a centralized unit. I'm a believer in the agency structure within college athletics. And that's not to say that you don't have creatives who are assigned to sports. I have dedicated personnel for multiple sports, and that's all that they focus on. But they're part of our creative unit, and they're able to learn and grow and be a part of creative discussion and progression because of that. And I think it's something the industry, especially college athletics, will figure out. It'll be real hard to figure out at some places and easier to figure out at others. But I think real creatives benefit from that creative camaraderie. And some places do really well. Some places have that creative camaraderie within a sport. And I think that works really well too. But I feel for these creatives who are plopped onto islands in sports. And at times I talk to athletic directors or deputy athletic directors. I say, hey, we can't keep creatives. Like, why is that? And oftentimes, like, that's why. It's because they're alone. Like, they're reporting to someone who doesn't understand what it takes to create these recruiting graphics. Or when the NCAA makes the change to add video to recruiting communication, they don't understand, like, what that change means. That means, like, hours and hours of time for your creative. So, I'm bullish on structure, the structure that we had at Clemson. I'm bullish on the structure we have here at BYU and kind of centralizing creatives the same way that we centralize strength staffs and compliance departments and things of that nature. So that's my vision of it. I think it's a good one, but I think that's something that college athletics would benefit from if we could get closer to structures like that across the board.
What would you say is your most proud moment or proud project or something that you've worked on over the course of your career?
I'll give you two. The thing I'm proudest of always is seeing students, younger creatives, like, get great jobs or move on or have opportunities. Like, that's my favorite. We have a student here who just got a fantastic internship, and like I was jacked up. Like, I was like, this is awesome. Like, I'm so excited. So that's one. That's kind of what keeps me going day to day. But as far as a project goes, preparing for Trevor Lawrence to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft at Clemson, and the content we were able to create around that moment is one of the things I'm proudest of. I'm a big believer in moments. I preach to our staffs, like, moments over edits. Like, I think we all have edits with a Z, you know, edits. And like, those are cool, but like, how can we capitalize on moments? And I think that was an opportunity where We knew Trev was going to be number one. It was like all but a foregone conclusion. And because of that, we were able to do some really creative things and partner with some groups. And I was just really proud of the creative organization and structure and how we executed it. And so as a project goes, promoting and highlighting the number one overall pick is definitely up there.
I have one more extremely important one.
Hit me, Brock. I like it.
We have to see whose hometown was smaller. How many kids did you graduate high school with?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I had 160 in my graduating class.
Wow.
Yeah.
Big metropolitan. Wow. I graduated with 28.
Wow. Really? Yeah. Small. I guess I'm just semi-small in that case. I should clarify all within that's the context.
Still small. That's still small. Don't get it twisted.
That's I was about 78. Yeah. So
really, we got a bunch of small town folks here.
Yeah.
I like it. That's good.
I think mine was like 350 in Omaha. So how am I the big city kid?
Big city, Omaha.
Big city, Omaha.
What are some things that you do outside of work that kind of help you refuel or recenter outside of strategy and creative?
It's grown over time. I'm grateful for it. I have a family now, wife, two kids, and being able to spend time with them is fantastic. I'll be honest, there was a time where like all I did was work. Like that's all I did. Sun up to sundown, I go home. I work in social, so I've got it and I'm just constantly there. And being able to spend time with my family, and having two little boys that like I'm able to focus on has been a pleasure. And something that really keeps me going. And then I love to golf as well, and then snowboard, which as you guys can imagine, moving back to Utah allows me to do that a little bit more. Not a lot of ski resorts in upstate South Carolina. So being able to be back in Utah has allowed me to do that a little
bit
more.
Yeah, but the golf in South Carolina.
Oh, I was just saying that. Like, I was talking to my dad. We went to like an indoor golf simulator here. And I told him, I was like, I'd be outside right now in Clemson most likely. So
exactly.
Yeah. No, it's a give and take. Give and take. We'll take the snowboarding, but we got to give up a little bit of the golf game.
And last thing, just those are how you do it. How do you protect and set boundaries for the people that work with you for having those boundaries of not overextending and doing things outside of just work?
Man, yeah. That's my job doesn't exist at a lot of places. The like kind of head of creative, like at the associate athletic director level, or, you know, at a VP level in professional sports or things like that. And I think that's a significant aspect of my job, like the blocking and tackling to allow creatives to be creative and to help coaches, administrators understand the asks that they're asking of creatives, and to be able to kind of be a barrier for that. That's my job. I've said that to our creatives before, of where they get into a situation with a coaching staff or whatever, and I step in and help mitigate some of those things. That's my job. And I think it's important. One of the things that I loved at Clemson, and it's the same way here at BYU, but we're growing, is the great respect that Clemson coaches, staff, you know, from Dabo Sweeney to the recruiting coordinator to everyone in between, understanding the value of creative and what it takes, and being able to be in rooms where there are times where I say, hey, let's go about that differently, or that's not feasible right now. And that may be one of the most valuable things about having a position like mine, in whether it's a professional sports team or in collegiate athletics, is having someone that can mitigate those conversations and to help administrators, coaches understand some of the asks that they're making, and helping our creatives. You know, we talk about work-life balance a lot. Like, this is college athletics. There are going to be time, like games end at 11 p.m. Like, there's nothing we're going to be able to do about that. But helping administrators understand why they shouldn't then come in at 9 a.m. on Monday. That's my job. Like those are the things that I really try and do. And it's certainly not an exact science, but I think it's an important one.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.